Hello, it's Healthy Gut Girl Kitty Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I am coming to you live from Sarasota, Florida. I'm not in your large intestine at the moment. I have been doing some traveling and some seeing family and then coming here, and I absolutely love it here. I love the weather, I love the people, I love the beaches, I love everything about it. So I will return to your colon at some point, but at the moment I'm just enjoying Florida. Today I have one of my favorite people on. This is Dr. Robert Selig. This is, I think, the third or fourth time that he's been on the show. He is just so unique and so special, and I love him. As if you're new to Dr. Selig, he is a chiropractor with a lot of naturopathic knowledge, a lot of mineral balance, probably one of, besides Dr. Tabrizian, he's probably one of the most fluent mineral practitioners, physicians that I have ever met. I think he really understands minerals, but then he brings in this beautiful, I guess, alchemic spin on everything, which to me always fascinates and blows my mind when he starts to talk about the periodic table and what we're all made up of and how we're made of ultimately of light. It's so engaging and fascinating to me. And then he ties it in with how it affects our hormones, our overall life, our overall, not just our physical biochemical bodies, but our spiritual bodies and our emotional bodies, everything. It's brilliant. Anyway, we jump right into it, so don't get shocked by that. We jump right into it, and he gets really down and dirty about some shocking things, especially hormone, progesterone absorption, and a lot of other things you're going to love. So enjoy Dr. Robert Selig.
Yeah, most of us are walking around with stagnant livers, stagnant kidneys, you know, because we've all been inundated with so much toxic garbage, and it bioaccumulates. And that's the thing about metals, you know, metals aren't biodegradable. That's why they last forever. You know, that's why we name the great cycles of time after the metals, the Iron Age, Bronze Age, Silver Age, the Golden Age, because metals aren't biodegradable and they bioaccumulate. As they bioaccumulate, they kick out the nutrient mineral, they take the parking spot of the enzymes, they cause a lot of pH disturbances, causing acidity. So they're blocking nutrients, causing acidification, and they're destroying the body. That's why we got to deal with these toxic metals. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they're really amazing when you think about these toxic metals, because we're all loaded with them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm confused about like the difference between calling calcium or like magnesium. How are those metals also? Like, I know they're minerals, but where do we draw the line between mineral and metal?
So I look at a mineral as something, as a nutrient that the body needs. When we talk about the toxic metals, that means, you know, arsenic, lead, mercury, but sometimes a nutrient mineral, when it oxidizes, then it behaves like a toxic metal.
Oh.
So it's the oxidized version of magnesium or calcium or copper or iron. And iron and copper have a love affair with oxygen, and they can easily oxidize when there's a disbalance. It's not that iron is bad or copper is bad. They're absolutely life-giving, but in the same breath, they can be life-taking. So that's why it's always about the balance. So when we think of a mineral that oxidizes, then it behaves like a toxic metal. And the body will release all these oxidized versions of these toxic metals that we may see as a calcium dump when we see that metastatic calcium going high. And it's, you know, that's always a good thing when these toxic metals, whether it's a nutrient oxidized version of it, or the toxic metal itself, like lead or arsenic. Did that make sense?
It did. It did. It's all, you know, since Dr. Tabrizian has been on my show a couple of times, and since he and I have had a few conversations privately as well, I feel like The more I know, the more confused I get. But I'm starting to see my way through. I'm starting to understand where I really thought I had a firm understanding of minerals and stuff. But when you and I did my hair test, my hair tissue mineral analysis, that's when I first realized that you can't just look at that test and say, oh, that's high, let's give her that. And that's low, let's give, let's take, you know, let's like you can't.
Right.
And that, I had such a realization with you about that. And then the more I started to delve into it, I got more confusing. And so now with Dr. Tabrizian and you, that's why I wanted you back on the show, is because I feel like, because for me, for my own selfish reasons, I feel like it's going to start to, I'm going to have some aha moments soon.
Yeah, you know, when we look at a mineral analysis, you're looking at patterns, which are the most important thing, then the mineral ratios, then the individual minerals, and then you look at how the toxic metals affect the certain patterns, affect the ratios, and affect the individual minerals. So that's why when you look at a hair test, you're looking at an amazing bird's eye view of what's going on, the health trends in your body. Like nothing else, because the patterns tell us so much. You can be in a four high pattern, you can be in a calcium shell pattern, a sympathetic dominant pattern, which I think you were in a sympathetic dominant pattern. The high calcium, the lower potassium, that's most of the adult population. That is slow oxidation. And so that's why when we look at a hair mineral test, we're able to see so many amazing things about profiling a patient, so we get a feel for who you are. Because minerals, to describe a mineral, they're just not dead rocks. You know, we think of minerals as just these dead rocks with, you know, devoid of protons, neutrons, and, you know, the electrons. We think they're soulless. Minerals are cosmic. They birth life. That's why minerals are a kingdom. They're a kingdom that brings life to all the other kingdoms. So minerals are inorganic. It's the inorganic that brings life to carbon organic chemistry. So the carbon organic chemistry, you know, we're basically carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. That's 97% of who we are. But that 3% of the minerals is what brings life to that carbon chemistry. That's why minerals are the spark of life. They encapsulate the cosmic forces. And that's why when we look at minerals, they have an energy that encapsulates certain planets and stars. And that's why when we're taking magnesium, when you're taking magnesium, you're taking the magnetic energy of the sun. And that magnetic energy of the sun is what births life on planet Earth, because photosynthesis happens because of magnesium. So in the heart of a plant, it's magnesium. In the heart of your porphyrin ring, it's iron. The only difference between you and a plant, iron and magnesium. Magnesium captures that sun essence to create life on planet Earth. No coincidence that when you look at the first 12 on the periodic table, you know, you got your trinity, hydrogen, helium, lithium, then you got your beryllium, your boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, then you have your fluorine, your neon, number 11, sodium, number 12, magnesium. The sun has to go through the 12 houses. That's why magnesium is that magnetic spark of the sun that bursts light, but it's magnetic. Everything has two forces, electrical and magnetic. So the sun is going to have an electrical and a magnetic. So the electrical force of the sun is a triune. We have a sunrise, a midday sun, and a sunset. So the masculine energy of the sun is gold. All that glitters is gold. The neutral energy of the sun is hydrogen. The sun, hydrogen is the most important element. Hydrogen is like the God particle. God is number one. Hydrogen is number one. So when you look at the first 12, you're going to see sodium and magnesium start that first cycle of 12. But number 13 is aluminum, right? When you look at your chart, number 13 is aluminum. What happened is we made 13 very malefic. We've churned 13 into the great enemy of the state. You know, it's the enemy because we should be on a 13-month lunar calendar. Then every month would be 28 days. So we screwed up the cycle. So when you look at the whole calendar, the 1 through 12, when you think of September, you know, you think of September should be 7. You know, that's what the sep means. O October, when you enter the octagon or the octopus, it has 8 legs, yet October is the 10th month. Dec means 10 when you run a decathlon, that's 10 events, yet December is the 12th month. So we screwed up the calendar, we got off the lunar calendar, and now we're on the solar Gregorian Julius Caesar type of calendar, and our time is off. When time is off, all rhythms and cycles in the body are going to be off. And that's part of what I call the wounded witch phenomena. We've destroyed the archetypal feminine, churned it into the evil 13. Everything is a little bit backwards, in my opinion.
Wow. Okay. Do you think that the calendar was turned into 12 months on purpose with the knowledge that they were screwing it up?
Absolutely. That's how you control the masses. And that's why there's an assault on the feminine. The feminine has been destroyed. Now, just think practically. When we say God, we think of God as a father. What about the feminine aspect of God? Makes zero sense. That's why, you know, God is like the zero. The zero is the circle of life that isn't feminine, it isn't masculine, it's both. And that's why when you split polarity, you're only looking at one pole. So when we look at polarity, we know that the in-breath needs the out-breath. The diastolic needs the systolic. The acids need the base. The life cycle needs the death cycle. The death cycle needs the life cycle. The sleep cycle needs the awake cycle. So everything has its two poles. We split polarity and we destroy the feminine energy, and that's the magnetic energy. We have the electrical energy, but we destroy the magnetic. So you can go to university and study a gazillion classes on electricity, but find me one class in university on magnetism. Doesn't exist. We've destroyed the Magdalene, the majestic, the magical, the magnanimous energy of the Magdalene feminine energy. It's been under attack, and that's why we have all the issues we see today. Yeah, and the great archetypal energies of masculine and feminine is the sun is the masculine electrical energy, the moon is the magnetic energy. Now, the moon has an electrical part, the sun has a magnetic part. The sun's magnetic part is magnesium. The moon's masculine part is zinc. So when you look at the alchemical metals of the moon, the alchemical metal of the moon is silver. The silver cord that births life. That's where all souls enter through the Tropic of Cancer, which is the moon. And that's the cardinal gate that opens up. And that's the umbilicus cord that is the silver cord. So when you're born, think of the attack on the baby at the moment we take our first breath. You know, so what do they give the pregnant woman to cause contractions? Pitocin.
Pitocin.
Which is synthetic oxytocin. Oxytocin is a posterior, it's a posterior pituitary hormone. Posterior pituitary is ruled by the moon. So right from the get-go, they give you industrial strength oxytocin. And what's interesting about the whole diencephalon, so your diencephalon is more the reptilian brain. In your diencephalon, it houses the thalamus, the hypothalamus, and the epithalamus. The epithalamus is the pituitary and the habenula. The pituitary is that sacred eye. So you have this trinity in the reptilian brain, that primitive brain, the thalamus, the hypothalamus, basically the pituitary. Now, what's interesting about those glands, they're not protected by the blood-brain barrier. So your pituitary and your posterior your pineal and your posterior pituitary are not protected by the blood-brain barrier. So it has a propensity to be attacked by chemicals and metals and all that stuff. So when the posterior pituitary that's secreting the oxytocin, that oxytocin is the love connection. It's the trust hormone. It's the, you know, it makes you feel that connection. When that's severed with industrial strength oxytocin to cause a contraction, so the oxytocin causes the calcium to be released. Calcium causes a contraction. Magnesium relaxes. Calcium contracts. That's how every excitable tissue works. So when you think of a skeletal muscle, a smooth muscle, a nerve fiber, calcium contracts, magnesium relaxes. That's for all excitable tissue. That's why when you have hypertension, they give you a calcium channel blocker to slow the contraction down, i.e., to slow the blood pressure down. So when they're giving you this industrial strength oxytocin, it releases the calcium to cause the contraction. The problem is those contractions are unbearable. Then what's the next thing they have to do? They have to give the woman an epidural to deal with the pain of those contractions. So now you got two horrible drugs to begin life. And God forbid, if you're a man, they're gonna, you know, cut off your foreskin, and you know, and then that's another ritual. So that's another trauma. And then when you see this surgeon coming at you with those surgical, you know, steel to cut the umbilical cord, they don't do that right because that's the umbilicus. You have to feel the pulse on the umbilicus, and you have to wait for that pulse to stop, and then you can cut the cord. But they cut the cord so quickly, and this is why we let the allopathic patriarch control the birthing part process that women have been controlling since the beginning of time. We sold that out to this patriarch. Meanwhile, they're destroying the whole birthing process, and the traumas that we have from the get-go is what I call the wounded witch phenomena. And that's what I see happening. Now, that was a lot to unpackage, so I'm going to let you dissect that and break that down and ask me any question from there.
Okay. I was just looking up the rate of labors, births that end in C-section when they're induced. I think it's really high. It's like 40% or higher. So if you know this woman is being induced and then you know with Pitocin given an epidural, and then there's a very good chance, a 40% chance that she'll end up in a C-section if she's been induced. That's really high. So you said, now this is how slowly I process. I'm going back to the first set of things that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a lot of information, so take your time, whatever question you need to formulate.
Thank you. So you said that a mineral can become a metal by oxidation. So when you're looking at hair tests and you see magnesium, how do you know that that is an oxidized magnesium? How do we know it's the mineral magnesium being utilized or whatever? Especially if it's being excreted into the hair, wouldn't that mean it's oxidized or unusable or unneeded or?
So this is where we have to understand, like, there's certain norms for the minerals. So, you know, magnesium should be at about a six on the lab scale, should be at six. When it starts to go higher, once it goes above 10, anything above 10, that's going to be bio unavailable, meaning that it's oxidized, meaning that it's useless. And that becomes the toxic magnesium version. And when you see the high magnesium, you're going to see the high calcium. And it's the calcium that gets us because all our aging diseases are calcium deposition diseases because calcium is Father Time, it's Saturn. It's going to get us all in the end. The whole goal with mineral balancing with healing is to slow down Father Time so we age gracefully without the cancers, without the debilitating brain diseases, where we end up in a nursing home because we can't feed ourselves, go to the bathroom on ourselves. That's horrific. So calcium is going to precipitate out of solution. And when it does, then it's acting as the great calcification. That's the oxidized version of calcium that behaves like cement. And then it will bind. Calcium is a cation. It will bind to an anion, the acids. So it could be a calcium urate, a calcium phosphate, a calcium oxalate, or whatever the acid is. The calcium oxalate, that's your typical kidney stone, but it can be any calcium binding to any acid, any anion. That becomes the crystalline deposits that start to cause the cataracts, the arterial sclerosis, the atherosclerosis, the hydroxyapatites in all our joints, or plaquing in the brains, or the gallstones, or the kidney stones, or the salivary stones, or whatever stone. But it starts with that calcium. So that's why when calcium starts to precipitate out of solution, that's going to become all your aging diseases, you know. So that's why we want to understand calcium. That's why when calcium goes too high, it's going to be the oxidized version of it. And the higher that calcium goes, then we start to get into a calcium shell. And then the calcium shell can be, you know, anything above 165, I believe, is the cutoff for the calcium shell. You can have a calcium shell of 200, 300, 400, 500. When you get above 300, you're getting to a petrified calcium. And that is, you know, you're knocking on heaven's door when we start to see these real deep calcium shells. So my goal as a mineral practitioner is start breaking down the shell. But then we have to understand what keeps calcium in solution? Why does calcium precipitate out of solution? Sodium and potassium and magnesium are the great modulators of calcium. Sodium and potassium keep calcium in solution. When sodium and potassium go low, then that's when we really see that calcium precipitating out. And calcium and magnesium have a synergistic and an antagonistic relationship. They're always modulating each other. So when you go into rigor mortis is what? Death, right? That's because it's a full-blown contraction because all the calcium channels are being released because magnesium, the spark of the sun, the magnetic spark of the sun, is no longer there to oppose calcium. Hence, we go into the rigor mortis, the full-blown contraction that we call death.
Okay, will you look at someone's blood labs and look at their magnesium being at 165? Can you pretty much tell what their blood magnesium, their RBC magnesium, is going to be?
Very difficult to do because 99% of the magnesium is in the soft tissues, where only 1% of the magnesium is in the blood. And the thing about a magnesium RBC test is being one of the worst tests to evaluate the status of magnesium. Most of the magnesium is utilized in the mitochondria. So a heart cell can have what? Thousands of mitochondria in just one heart cell? Because mitochondria is where we create that ATP. So RBCs don't have mitochondria. So that's why assessing the magnesium status via a magnesium RBC test is futile. So most of the magnesium, 99% of the magnesium, is in the tissues, the bones, the organs, the glands. That's where the biochemistry happens. Biochemistry doesn't happen in the blood, it happens in the tissues. Blood is a transport medium. So if you see low magnesium on serum and blood or RBC, then the warning signal is going to be a little bit deeper. Then you would match that to a hair test, and you may see very low levels of magnesium on a hair test, or you may see very elevated magnesium on a hair test. So that's where you have to have an eye to look at these hair tests. And that's why serial hair testing is the key, because you can see the patterns, the ratios, as we go under, you know, controlled demolition, as we're breaking down the body, trying to build up the adrenals and the liver and the kidneys. So in this controlled demolition, we're going to see these toxic metals dump. When these toxic metals come out, like when mercury comes out, zinc will usually go lower on a hair test because now zinc is taking the parking space where the mercury has lodged in. And so that's why mineral balancing is an art and the science. So my goal as a practitioner is to merge the two worlds of science and not just get into the bean counting, because we have to understand there's an art to it. My one caveat to healing is no one doctor, person, or thing is the custodian or the arbiter of healing truth. Healing is always between patient and God. What I do is I kind of cut through the BS and really work on the mineral grid, because the mineral grid is telling us so much information when we understand the energetics of what the mineral is, where when we understand the biochemistry of what calcium does, what magnesium does, what iron does. So we need to know that stuff. Absolutely important, but we need to know the energy of it. So if we're trying to get rid of copper, how are we going to dump copper if we haven't dealt with the themes of Venus? So when you think of copper, it's the metal of Venus since the beginning of time. So if we don't understand the themes of Venus, Venus is beauty, it's art, it's music, it's love, it's sex, it's relationships. So if we're conflicted with our, how we look and feel about ourselves, if we're conflicted with our sexual energy, our relationships, our love relationships, we may have to understand the energetics of that Venetian theme before we are actually going to dump the copper. And that's the energetics of the planet metal correspondence. And that's where we try to understand both the science and the energy of the mineral, because the minerals are a cosmic force that is a kingdom that births life to bring life to that carbon chemistry.
If a person is coming to you and they say, okay, I'm having love issues in my relationship issues or Venus related issues, like I don't know, is low libido, sexual dysfunction, tumultuous relationship. So you're saying that you need to understand that aspect of what's going on in their life in order to know how to move their copper, or vice versa. You're going to move their copper, and hopefully that's going to help affect that part of their lives. Does that make sense?
So there's different phases. Our first goal is before we get into the psychological energy things of things, we got to get patients to first base. Most of us aren't even at first base. So when we get to first base and we want to get to second base, and we've been at this healing journey for a couple of years, and we've been doing the basic rudimentary cleaning up the diet, avoiding the toxins, getting some minerals, hitting some detox, that alone can take just 3 years just to get the first base. Then when we get the first base and we still see that the mineral grid isn't really moving, this is where we need to understand the energetics of these minerals. This is where homeopathy is brilliant, because it's giving you impotency. Maybe you take copper impotency, maybe you take calcium impotency, and that helps to reset the energetics of these metals so the body will release it. So most adults are what we call poor eliminators. So you'll look at a hair test and you'll see all their toxic metals are very low. And they're going to say, wow, that's great. I don't have toxic metals in me. It's just the opposite. You're a poor eliminator of the toxic metals, A, because the adrenals are weak, because you need energy to mobilize a toxic metal. Then the other issues is most people are walking around with stagnant livers and stagnant kidneys. So you're not, the two organs of detoxification, the most important two organs of detox is the liver and the kidneys. Most of us have scarring in the microtubules of the kidneys from early on, from all the chemicals and metals. Most of us are stagnant livers, fatty livers, sclerosed livers, liver, so there's a degree of the more scarring we get, the harder it is to mobilize out these toxic metals. So most adults are what we say are poor eliminators. They're poor eliminators. So this is where we have to focus on, how do we clean out the kidneys? How do we clean out the liver while we're doing the mineral balancing? And then we'll also notice another interesting pattern where it's called an armoring pattern. So an armoring pattern is we look at a previous test and we see that poor eliminators, let's say cadmium is a poor eliminator, then the cadmium on the next test actually got lower. So that's called an armoring pattern where the patient is putting up an armor because they don't want to deal with the themes of cadmium. Cadmium is a rough metal, it's a hardening metal. It makes you hard, it will calcify your kidneys like no tomorrow. It will cause a hardening of all organs, tissues, and glands. So as that cadmium gets armored, it gets pressed down even more. This is where the patient has to see, where am I becoming too hard in life? Where am I not showing the flexibility to adjust to this or to that? And they're putting up that armoring plate. And that's why cadmium won't be released until the patient energetically becomes more flexible in their ways. Very esoteric, but did I lose you on that?
No, I love that. No, I the exact opposite. I wonder, like, okay, so it's a two part process of, yeah, you can't just eliminate the cadmium, like you just said, because the body will say, no, don't. Your body will stop it, energetically stop it from being eliminated, even though you're priming your body to get rid of it. But you are in a place that maybe you're resentful and you're bitter and you're going through a divorce and you're hating on the world. And so your body won't let you energetically allow you to release that. So it's like a two part. I love it. I think it makes so much
Exactly.
sense.
You said that so in a simplified version of what I was saying, you said it more beautifully than I. Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, that I got it right from you. So yeah, I'm trying to understand it, and I think that's the case with all of it. So, like, going back to the idea of a couple, a woman or a man that's having issues in a relationship and struggling with the Venus energy, you're going to have a really hard time like remediating your relationship, if you will, if you don't try to work on that Venus energy, if you don't try to balance out the copper, because it might be too high or it might be too low, right? It could be, so it can
You
be
can
either
have
one.
deficiencies, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a two-part thing. See, that's so beautiful. I send a lot of people to my friend Irene Lyon, who I'm actually going to meet in person for the first time today. She does somatic healing, the Feldenkrais technique, and she works on the energetic level of healing the body, emotional trauma, PTSD, stuff like that. And I have incredible testimonies of clients that I send to her who I can't help at all because, I mean, I can help them to, what I help people with, as you probably already know, is I really help people with gut health and hormonal health to some degree. And so just like boosting metabolism in general, but sometimes they just can't budge. And I always say, I think there's an emotional component here. And what you're saying is there's always an emotional or energetic component to all of these imbalances that break down to the very core of what we're made of. And so balancing that, being able to do it from an energetic perspective as well as a biochemical perspective, is really kind of the whole picture, isn't it?
Exactly. So when you think of the word, when we think of copper, Venus, think of the word Venus, that Venus energy can become venerated or it becomes venereal. The same root of the word can go either way, but it's the energy of how are we addressing our relationships? Are we being dishonest in our relationships? Are we, playing games in our relationships? And that's when that copper essence can go that venereal way. But if we're really opening our hearts and our souls to our relationships, then that energy, that copper essence can become venerated. And so that's why we always want to see the physical and the energetic components of these minerals. And that's why I say they're cosmic. And that's why it's such a beautiful thing when we understand how we can move the mineral grid. Because when I look at a hair test, to me, That's your birth chart. I'm looking at your hair test. I see all the planets in you. I see the planets that are strong. I see the planets that are weak. And I'm thinking, we come in with the crude doses of the minerals, and sometimes we have to go slow. Sometimes we can go more aggressive. But then I'll also look at the energetics of it, and that's where the homeopathic remedies are indispensable in helping to move the healing needle.
So let's bring it back to the female and let's talk about hormones a little bit. So, and I know this is, I think you've seen me post this quite a bit. I've had my group now for like 9 years and my podcast for 9 years. And something I always post, and now that we have so many members in the group, people literally laugh at me and leave the group sometimes when I post, I'm like, there's a bad moon arising, folks. Like, we're batten down the hatches. Or I'll say, oh, wow, we had a full moon pass and I didn't even hear any complaints, you know? And I'm always referencing this. And sometimes when I say, okay, there's this new wolf moon or whatever it is, how's everyone feeling? And like I said, some people will be like, oh, I didn't realize this was that kind of group. See ya. And they'll literally leave. And then other people will be normal and they'll say, wait, Kitty, what does the moon have to do with any of this? So that's my question for you.
Yeah. So when you think of the moon, the sun is the fire, the moon is the water. That's the classic. And that's where, when you look at the Jewish symbol, the Star of David, it's got the triangle pointing down. That's the water element. It's got the triangle pointed up. That's the fire element. It's water and fire coming together to create life. It's a yin and yang. So if the moon governs the water, so the water element, so we think of the water element, we know the moon has a gravitational pull on the oceans, the high tides, the low tides. Everyone knows that. So if the moon controls the water element in you are all your fluids, your blood, your cerebral spinal fluid, your
Lymph.
saliva, your seminal fluids, menstrual fluids. All fluids, digestive fluids, are all ruled by the moon. So the moon controls all the fluids in the body. And that's why we see that the moon is the template for all cycles of life. Because the moon, when you think of the moon glands, the pineal is a moon gland, the posterior pituitary is a moon gland. Then you look at the organs like the breast, uterus, and stomach. What organs change sizes and shape more frequently like the moon? The breast change sizes and shape. The stomach will change size and shape from meal to meal. And the uterus will change sizes and shape just like the moon. So the moon governs the breast, the uterus, the ovaries. It rules the anus and the buttocks. You've heard that term, I was mooned. That's because it rules the buttocks, So this verbiage goes back into antiquity. And so the moon governs all the water fluids in the body, all the fluids. Now, there may be a Mars component to it, there may be a Venus component to it, there may be a Sun component to it, but ultimately, the moon governs all the waters. So when we think of the moon, how it affects the hormones, the moon has, we know, a gravitational pull, but then there's a thing called ionization. Sometimes the moon ionization can be good or bad, depending on if it's positive ions or negative ions. Those negative ions are what we want. That's from the great oceans, the waterfalls, and the caves. That's where we create those negative ions. After a rainstorm, we get those negative ions. That has a direct effect on the hormones, on FSH. That has a direct stimulatory effect to influence FSH. Then we understand light, how light affects the hormones in the body. So when we look at the eyes, the darkness and light will enter into the eye. Darkness may cause a depolarization, light may cause a repolarization. So the light, when it comes into the eye, is going to end up in the hypothalamus, in this cluster of cells called the superior chiasmatic nucleus, which regulates all cycles of life. birthing cycles, migratory cycles, sleep and awake cycles, feeding cycles, sexual cycles. So light is so important. So when that light hits that hypothalamus and that cluster of cells called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, there that's going to modulate what to do next. So then from the hypothalamus, it's going to go down into a ganglion in the neck, which is weird. So there's a ganglion called the superior cervical ganglion, which is going to have epinephrine. That epinephrine is going to be released in darkness, and that's going to have a direct line to the pineal gland. Then the pineal gland with that epinephrine, funny, you need like an adrenaline to stimulate melatonin. Very paradoxical, because then that epinephrine is the impetus to stimulate the tryptophan to serotonin to melatonin. And then when you look at the melatonin and serotonin, the light and the dark element, what's in between serotonin and melatonin? It's called DMT. That's the dimethyltryptamine. That's the ayahuasca, the magic mushrooms. That's what allows us to dream, to have visions, to become more telepathic. That allows us to be really more focused on our intuition, on focusing how I want to live my life and how I want to live out my dreams and all that. But that's under attack because that pineal gland, like I said, housed in that diencephalon, is not protected by the blood-brain barrier. In fact, the pineal has the second largest blood supply, kidneys being one, pineal being number two. What? Second largest blood supply out of all the organs in the body. And yet that pineal gland, about the size of the pea, that gives you your serotonin, melatonin, DMT. And it also makes a lot of the steroid hormones in the brain. So that's under attack. That's the pineal. Like I said, that's a moon. That's a moon gland. The moon is the feminine. The feminine is under attack. And that's why how important it is to understand the hormonal connection to the menstrual cycle, fertility cycles, whether we're trying to understand conception or to prevent pregnancies or to get pregnant. That moon governs all the water element, and that's the blood, and that's that menstrual blood, and that menstrual blood is very, very powerful. We look at the menstrual blood as taboo. It's ugly. It's disgusting. That menstrual blood is
everything.
Amazing, but that's what I mean by the wounded witch phenomena. We've demonized the feminine. We burnt them at the cross. We nailed them to the stake. That's the mentality of what we're doing to the feminine archetypal energy. And that's why our goal is to bring balance. But the moon, absolutely, through ionization, through light, through gravitation, and through there's one other mode, electromagnetism. Through the electromagnetic forces of the moon influence the hormones. The light influences the hormone. The ionization influences the hormone. And the gravitational pull influences the hormones. So the moon has been so revered since the beginning of time. And this is where we need to exalt our understanding of the moon, especially if we want to balance hormones or to get pregnant and stuff like that. So that's a lot to unpackage right there.
Well, that you answered my question, which was, what do you mean by govern? But you just answered it. And so when I notice that a lot of people have in the group, and you can tell when there's a full moon, you can see when there's a full moon that really has an impact, you can see it in the attitudes and the argument. Unfortunately, it's oftentimes negative. And I wonder about that because you were saying all the different fluids that it influences. Well, I'm thinking, you know, for me, I've always been very sensitive to the moon, and I know that it's primarily just part of who we are to be sensitive to it. But also I was quite ill as a child. And I know I had a tremendous amount of inflammation in the body. And so it would make me have episodes, you know, whether it was, you know, sleepwalking, night terrors, whatever. And then as I got older, and even now, I notice that it'll cause flare-ups of like, viral flare-ups and like EBV and herpes. Like those things will get activated in a lot of women when there's a really strong full moon. And oftentimes every time, like there's some kind of reaction that I can see happening in the group with the women. And remember my father, who was a deputy sheriff of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he hated full moons because he said they were so violent. They were so, I remember just a lot, and nurses as well. You hear a lot of nurses that say that hospitals get pretty wacky, emergency nurses around a full moon. So why is it a negative connotation? Why does it seem to have negative influence?
It's the way we're looking at it because no planet, orb, or anything is good or bad, but it does have an effect on us. So when we think of the moon, that's where the lunacy comes into play. The monster, the moonster is the monster, but then we've been moonstruck with love. So it depends on the energy we're using, and this is where magical practices come into play. This is where we have to set our intentions to the cycles of the moons and stuff like that, because we can see that hospital settings, there's going to be more, emergency room visits on a full moon. So they even, whether it's in the police department or the emergency rooms or schools or mental wards, all the staffing knows that everything goes up incrementally on the full moon. So they even have a thing called a lunar pay raise, to
Really?
oh yeah. And so we know this. And so that's where we understand the lunatic when that moon energy, so that moon energy, we said silver is more alchemical, but what's the nutrient mineral of the moon? That is more the feminine. That's sodium. Wherever water goes, sodium goes. And so you think of the sodium, when you stub your toe, the first thing that comes out of you, when you stub your toe on that nerve fiber, sodium is flooding in, instigating an action potential. That sodium floods in. That sodium is very volatile. It's the most volatile element on the periodic table. That's where the F-bombs and the pain come out because sodium is flooding in. Now, there's times when sodium on the oceans, we see that sodium is balanced. The oceans are beautiful and calm, and we want to dive into the oceans. But then on a dime, those oceans can become a tsunami and take nations to its knees. That's the volatility of sodium. Wherever sodium goes, water goes. Wherever water goes, sodium goes. And that's part of the hormonal sodium, aldosterone, estrogen connection. And there's a huge link between that. So understanding the moon and sodium, moon is governed. Sodium is the metal of the moon. Silver is the metal of the moon. That's the most ancient archetypal metal of the moon, but sodium is the metal of the moon. Manganese is the metal of the moon. Zinc is the masculine energy of the moon because zinc protects all the fluids in the body. Every fluid in you is lined with zinc to protect you from infections. So zinc is that masculine energy giving support to that feminine. It's protecting the waters. And that's how zinc behaves in the body. It's always sacrificing itself for the greater good. When you look at steel, the whole steel industry, how do they protect steel iron from rusting? They galvanize it. The galvanization is a zinc coat, protects the iron. Then you look at all the batteries, the lithium batteries, the cadmium batteries, whatever the battery, the anode typically is a zinc anode. So the zinc anode will take the hit to protect the battery. That's the energy of zinc. It's the higher octave of many of the other metals. It's like the spiritual warrior always fighting for the greater good. So that zinc is so important. I told you to ask Dr. Tabrazian about carbonic acid. Carbonic acid is how you deal with CO2. CO2 we know is a gas, but CO2, as soon as it diffuses into the blood, it's going to behave like an acid. So you have to hide the Trojan horse. You have to be able to hide it. So CO2 will immediately react with water. via the carbonic anhydrase enzyme, which is absolutely a zinc dependent enzyme to fuse the CO2 with the water to give you carbonic acid. Carbonic acid is going to, when it goes to the kidneys, that's the whole bicarbonate system. That's the buffering system. That's zinc. When that carbonic acid finds its way to the stomach, that's what's going to make your stomach acid. The carbonic acid gets into the stomach, and then there's going to be called the chloride ship, where the bicarb comes out of the stomach back into the blood, and then the chloride is going to go into the stomach, and then the hydrogen and chloride through a few steps will give you your HCl. So this is the importance of understanding that moon controlling the water element. We see it with the zinc protecting the waters. We see it with the sodium. We see it with the silver. We see it with many minerals. And that's the energy of understanding that moon quality to the certain correspondence of metals.
Okay, so then for the lunatic, would you say that, you know, he has an imbalance of like maybe too much sodium and like a lot of inflammation? And so when the moon comes along, the full moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie in the sky. And then what is it pulling on the fluids in the body? Is it agitating them in some way? Like, what is the actual action that is creating sometimes this hyper stimulated reaction?
Yeah, there's definitely a mechanism with sodium. Now, sodium, the moon energy through the ionization, the electromagnetic field of that moon affecting the luminescence of the bioelectrical photons and all that stuff, how that affects the other toxic metals. So that may mobilize aluminum, that may mobilize arsenic, lead, mercury. That will cause the kidneys to screw up the sodium will go rogue, and it's the sodium that you experience as being very volatile, causing your anger, your belligerence, your craziness, your this and that. So it may be just directly the water sodium, but it's more the other toxic metals influencing at a kidney level, and that's causing sodium to get spiked because of these toxic metals. So that's it's a great question, but I can't answer it exactly because there's so many unknowns that we don't know.
Yeah.
So in a simple nutshell, there's a lot of metals that are being stirred up because of that luminescent biophotonic energy of the moon that affects all the metals to some degree. And when those toxic metals hit the liver, hit the kidneys, then the kidneys start to go, they spaz, you know, that's where that sodium will spike. And it's the sodium that pulls the water. And that's where we can get the emotions. Because we always said water is emotions.
Yeah. Major emotions.
Major.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the viral component, I guess there could be an element of immunity being reduced in some way because of this, like the metals maybe somehow, or the body starts to tend to that metal component and leaving the Epstein bar to kind of exacerbate or something. I don't know, because it's really like clockwork with a lot of people. And they're I'm always being asked that question, you know, why do I always get flare-ups? Lyme disease, big flare-ups. I'm trying to think of other things that come up as well.
Worms.
Parasites. Yeah.
Parasite, big, because, you know, the photonic energy of the moon is affecting the whole mineral matrix, the mineral grid. And when those toxic metals get influenced, toxic metals are altering the pH. That pH will become more acidic. Then the viruses and the bacteria and the fungi all get activated. We call it an aggravation, a herx, or a retracing, or some form of an aggravation. And so each person will be unique to how it affects them. Some it may be recurrent infections of an Epstein-Barr. Some may be more worms or candida get infiltrated. But this is why we got to get to these toxic metals, because if we don't get to these toxic metals, we don't really fix the big issue. And like I said, toxic metals are not biodegradable. They last forever. That's why we have to have a different sort of energy to remove them. That's why you better have more patency in the liver, in the kidneys. That's why we do the coffee enemas. That's why we hit the infrared saunas. And then a toxic metal isn't going to leave its parking space until the nutrient mineral gets into its space, because there's a thing called ionic and molecular mimicry where these metals behave like a metalloestrogen. So we heard of xenoestrogens from drugs, from, you know, the chemicals. BPAs, the BT, mm-hmm. you know, the whole list of all these xenoestrogens. The emerging class of xenoestrogens are called metalloestrogens, arsenic, lead, mercury, and the worst metalloestrogen is copper because of its intimate relationship with the estrogens. So that copper is very estrogenic. Now, that doesn't mean copper is bad with estrogen, because you need it to understand its role in regulating the estrogen and the aldosterone and that sodium connection. But in a copper overload, we're going to produce too many of the estrogens. Then we're prone to, what does excess estrogens do? Growth, fat growth, acne growth, fibroid growth, cyst growth, cancer growth. It grows. That's what estrogens do when they're dysregulated. So our goal is, if we're going to deal with the estrogens, we better deal with that copper. And so that's why the hair test is probably the greatest way to assess the status of copper. It's as predictable as a liver biopsy without the cost and the invasiveness and the pain of a liver biopsy. And so most people will come back with low copper on their hair test and say, my copper is low, I'm deficient. However, when you read a hair test, there's many, many indicators for a hidden occulted copper. So that's where we have to have an eye of flexibility to look at low copper and understand there's at least 20 markers that are very indicative of a hidden copper overload. And then eventually through serial hair tissue analysis, eventually you'll see a copper dump. It may take 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, but I guarantee at some point in time, you will see that copper dump at some point in time.
Wow. So is there another way in? Like, you know, you said before, healing is between the individual and God. Like, do you have to start with the minerals from your perspective? Or can you, because like, I've really gotten into this stage of my life now where, and I think I might've had too many cooks in the kitchen when I was working on minerals. I was, you know, working with Morley Robbins. I was working with you. I was working with a couple of other people and had quite a few cooks in the kitchen. And I got like overwhelmed with that concept that it could take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And then I got sidetracked and started really just working on what, like you said, first base. I started working on the things that I teach, which is, you know, boosting metabolism. And, you know, I haven't looked at my hair. I did a hair tissue test for steroids. I don't know if you knew. I never knew that there was such a thing. The researcher, Georgie Dinkoff, started to sell the access to this hair tissue mineral analysis test for steroid hormones. And that was the last time I did a hair tissue mineral analysis with nails, hair, and skin from different areas. And, but I really just got caught up in, all right, I need to focus on sealing my leaky gut. I need to focus on exercise for my body type, eating enough. I was chronically under eating. And this was just in the last 2 years. And I was like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe how many things improved, you know, and now I'm almost fully in menopause. I keep saying that, but then I have like a little mini period. And so I'm like, wow, I'm not having the normal menopausal or hormonal symptoms that most women suffer with. And I feel great. And I'm like, all right, maybe I should do a hair mineral tissue just to see what has changed since, I guess, probably 4 years since I did that with you, maybe. And but I guess back to my original question, which is there another way into balancing? Or do you feel like you ultimately need to address that in that mineral way?
Because I understand how important minerals are for every physiological enzymatic function in human physiology, so I understand that, and I understand how the anti-nutrient, the mercury, the lead, the arsenic, the glyphosates, the chemicals block certain nutrient minerals. So yes, minerals are important, but trusting our intuition. Intuition is the moon. Trusting that moon intuitive side is absolutely important. And so this is where we have to be able to intuit what my body needs, and that's the uniqueness of it. Maybe taking too much of this, too much of that, because everyone says you got to take this, and then you take that and you feel like shit when taking it. That's where you need to trust your intuition. Maybe you needed to repair that gut a little bit. Maybe you needed to move the blood a little bit before the minerals are actually going to work. Most of the time when we take minerals, most of them are excreted out. The reason why we keep taking them out, taking them breakfast, morning, lunch, dinner, bed, because we want some absorption to happen where that metal gets in, where it's not being excreted out. So we want to increase the absorption of the mineral. So to answer your question, there's always that intuitive aspect to healing. And this comes back to diet. People say, what diet should I go on? I go, diet should be intuitive. If you grew up on cheeseburgers and milkshakes, maybe you need to be vegan for a year, but you're not going to stay vegan your whole life because that will end up killing you. But then if you take the Eskimo and make the Eskimo vegan, you'll kill him. So that's why the diet should be very intuitive. It should always be organic. We should eat locally. We should eat seasonally. We should eat intuitively. We should eat the spice of life. We should eat less to live longer. That's my basic tenets of the diet. Everyone's saying be carnivore, be an herbivore, be a paleo, or the macro neurotic actually becomes, no, the macrobiotic becomes macro neurotic
I love
because
that.
they're trying to micromanage every nutrient. It's like trying to micromanage the Niagara, every water drop falling from the Niagara Falls. You can't do that. So this is where your intuitive approach is very powerful. That's your intuitive moon essence guiding you.
And then I was thinking, what the heck is up with blood labs? How in the H double hockey sticks did they ever did a conventional medicine decide that blood labs are the gold standard of everything, of every way to diagnose anything? I mean, I have been so shocked over the last couple of years with doing this hair mineral analysis. I don't know if you know I did this, but I because of Georgie Dinkoff's steroid lab test, hair test, I had a few doctors donate. I had a 24-hour urine lab donated by a gynecologist. I had a blood spot donated. I had a Dutch dried urine. I did a blood serum. That was the only one I paid for. And I paid my cost for the Dutch. And I'm forgetting one. So the hair mineral, the 24-hour urine, the dried urine, the blood spot, the blood serum, and I thought there were six. Anyway, all I did, except for the hair mineral analysis, which of course is like 3 months of hair or something, I did all those tests in 24 hours. And then we took the blood lab, the hair mineral test, and we just compared them. And then I spoke with all those practitioners about it. And none of them correlated. They all said something different. But what was really fascinating was that the hair mineral analysis test was more similar to my symptoms and what I was going through than anything else.
Wow.
Yeah. The
Very
cortisol, I think, in the
interesting.
blood was, yeah.
You know
The
how they use, what they do with the hair? So part of my disagreement with Dr. Tabazian is I think they wash the hair in Australia where he's from. There's only two labs in the United States that don't wash the hair. Most labs wash the hair because they want to remove the contaminants. Okay. Now, when they wash the hair, that removes the sodium, the potassium, the calcium, and sometimes the zinc. So only two labs don't wash the hair. Then they'll take that sample of hair, you know, that goes through a few processes, then they're going to burn it. And when they burn the hair through
Spectrometry.
spectrometry, that's the same technology they use to figure out the elements in the stars, you know, so the minerals in the stars. It's the same technology because each mineral gives off a light frequency, and then they put it into their computer program, and it tells us the status of calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium, zinc, etc. So it's a very interesting way they're going, but it's the light. And it's the light that each metal gives off is how they're measuring it. Because at the end of the
Wow.
day, it's all light. You know, that's the mystery of light. That's why hair to me is the gold standard for analyzing to see the health trends in the body. And it's not going to tell you you have cancer or you have this or you have that. It's going to tell us when you see, you know, a low sodium potassium ratio, you're going to be more prone to chronic infections. You know, you're going to have, you know, chronic infections. You're going to have a lot of resentment, a lot of hostility, a lot of low energy, because that sodium potassium, that's your adrenals. You know, those are your adrenal minerals. You know, and sodium is mostly a aldosterone response. Potassium is mostly a cortisol response. Those are part of your adrenal hormones. So that's why I love the hair analysis, because it really gives a window into the health trends like no other test. So if you see someone in a in what we call a step in a step up pattern, a step up pattern, they're stepping out of life. They're on the verge where they probably will have a stroke or a heart attack, you know, within the next year or less. You know, that's how critical that step up pattern. That's where copper is beautiful. You may have to give someone 10 milligrams of copper if they're in a step up pattern to help fix that ratio. So that's why you never want to demonize one mineral. Say never give copper, never give this. That's ridiculous. We want to be able to you know, we want to be able to profile the patient. We want to know their medical history, their pharmacological history, their emotional history, their birthing history, you know, through the timeline, so we can get a feel for who and where they are at. So the moon governs fertility. It governs the menstrual cycle, fertility. So what's the main mineral in men in sperm? What's the number one, you know, so in sperm, what's the mineral in sperm?
Zinc.
Zinc, baby, zinc. Because when you see the zinc hitting the ovum, they have this film that's called the zinc spark of life. And that zinc spark of life has been recorded on video, where you can actually see the spark of life when that zinc loaded sperm hits the ovum. That is the zinc spark of life. That's why the copper IUD is so amazing and how it prevents pregnancy, because it destroys the sperm by just by destroying the zinc in the sperm. Now, most men are walking around zinc deficient, meaning most men today are shooting blanks, and we're shooting blanks and we haven't addressed the zinc issue. That's why zinc is that masculine spiritual warrior energy that is part of the moon, that has that fertility component to it. And we see that in the males with their sperm, and hopefully they have zinc so they can make their sperm.
Let's just go back to that one moment when you said the copper IUD is amazing. Let's clarify that, please. It's
Amazing
amazing. It
for
does what it does.
blocking, it's horrible for your health. Absolutely god awful, because that will cause a copper overload. And so that copper overload. So when you think of zinc, you have about 3,000 milligrams of zinc in the body, anywhere, depending on how big or little you are, anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams of zinc. With copper, you only have about 100 to 150 milligrams of copper. You see the difference? 150. So we'll take equal math. We'll say 2,000 zinc, 100 copper. That's a 20 to 1 ratio. So that's why zinc should always be more preferential when it comes to dosing with copper. And I like maybe it's going to be a 20-to-1 ratio. Now, depending on the pattern I see on a hair test, it may be a 21, 20-to-1 ratio, 30-to-1 ratio, or a 40-to-1 ratio, depending on what I see in the mineral patterns. Let me go back to the hormones. So all your sex steroid hormones, so all steroid hormones exert their effect on the nucleus, right? You know, so they get through the cell membrane, simple diffusion, they get in. That's why the birth control patch works, because it gets the hormone in. That's why progesterone can easily be put on the skin, because it will get into the cell, but it exerts its effect on the cell nucleus. This, to get that hormone, any steroid hormone, to get it into the cell, you better have a zinc finger. The zinc finger allows the hormone to be transcribed, translated into a usable protein, but you gotta have that zinc finger to get the hormone into the cell nucleus.
OMG. So, are you saying that absorption issues with progesterone could be due to a zinc deficiency?
Absolutely. And a zinc deficiency can be because of mercury, cadmium, lead, arsenic, glyphosate, atrazines. The list is endless. Because have you ever seen the Simpsons skit? You know how the Simpsons are the great Nostradamus? They're very prophetic in their in popular culture. Did you ever see the skit that the Simpsons had on a world without zinc? Nothing works.
I didn't.
They're letting you know. Now, symbolically, they're saying the battery of the car doesn't work because zinc drives the adrenals, the battery. They're saying they're showing the gun doesn't work. The gun represents your immune system. So zinc is needed to activate your white blood cells to give you an immune system. What was the third example? Was the gun, the battery, and I don't remember the third thing, but they're letting you know a world without zinc. So when the Simpsons are warning you, take that seriously. And so there is a war on zinc. So even the WHO, the World Health Organization, not the band, the WHO, they're telling you one third of the world's population has a gross zinc deficiency. 2 billion people have a gross, this is from the WHO, not me. The WHO is telling you 2 billion people have a gross zinc deficiency. I'm saying most of the world has a marginal subclinical zinc deficiency that will never be revealed on blood tests and, all the tests. Even on a hair test, zinc always looks like it's in a normal range. That's because most adults are poor eliminators. When the metals start coming out and they rise, then the zinc goes down, revealing that zinc deficiency.
Oh my gosh, you just probably changed everyone's life who is on progesterone having issues with absorption.
Yeah.
Wow. Because it's really a mystery. That's part of the problem with progesterone in general is oral progesterone, like Prometrium, is difficult. They say it's one of the best ways to absorb, but the problem is so many people have leaky gut. And then there's the sublingual, which is probably really good, but the uptake is so quick that you have to take it more frequently, so it's not as effective. So you'd have to be taking, a small amount every 2 hours, every 3 hours or something to get what some of these women desperately need who have PMDD, PCOS, all the things. And the topical is amazing. Suppositories are great. But even so, we have women, including myself back in the day, I was on 800 milligrams of topical progesterone before I started to really see massive changes in my body. A lot of these women, there are women in my group, which I totally support mega dosing, but I'm also like, look, if you're at 2,500 milligrams of progesterone, first of all, that is a very expensive habit. Second of all, something's being overlooked, let's try to get to the bottom of this. And so we talk about what we can do to improve absorption. And yeah, mineral balance is thrown around here and there, and candida is an issue, and heavy metals are an issue. But I don't think anyone has ever said You might have a zinc deficiency.
What's the most researched gene in cancer? Do you know that off the top of your head?
BRCA?
That's one of them, but the P53 gene.
Okay.
The P53 gene is referred to as the guardian of the genome, the anti-cancer gene, the apoptosis gene.
Okay.
That P53 gene is absolutely zinc dependent. And so the P53 gene, the zinc finger, allows that gene to bind to the mutated strands of the DNA. So it can bind to the DNA binding domain, but you got to have that zinc finger so it can bind to that mutated strand. Then that enzyme can either delete it, apoptosis it, repair it, stop the cell cycle while it figures out what it needs to do. But at the end of the day, that P53 gene, that P53 enzyme is absolutely zinc dependent. And that's why there's a war on zinc. So when you have low zinc, you're going to see the cancers, you're going to see the hormones, you're going to see the immune system stop. And that's why I say we need to have more of an understanding of zinc, and we need to understand how many toxic metals block zinc. Even Dr. Tabarzian, I have a hard time pronouncing his name.
Tabriz,
Tabrizian,
like
doctor,
Febreze.
he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant man. Love him to death. He is telling you that one ion of mercury can block 1,000 ions of zinc. Okay. And that was through the diuresis, through the carbonic anhydrase enzyme. When they were giving you diuretics to lower your blood pressure, they would give you the mercurial diuretics. Meanwhile, you were pissing out the zinc in the kidneys, and you were pissing out at a 1,000 to 1 clip. And so
Whoa.
this is why we need to understand that anti-nutrient component to it.
Amazing. Okay, so what do you tell everyone who's listening to this, who's like, who's on Amazon right now buying zinc? What do you have to say to them?
Start easy with zinc. Don't go crazy because just because I say take zinc, that doesn't mean you go out and take 100 milligrams of zinc, because then that can displace the copper and it can cause a disbalance with other nutrients. We need to not look at heroic doses. We need to build ourselves up. Maybe we start with 10 milligrams, work up to 30 milligrams. And this is why I love hair testing, because it's easy for me to prescribe zinc knowing where that sodium potassium is. If I need to raise sodium, then if I need to raise sodium, then that's where you got to have that copper, to help raise the sodium. And that's where you probably will keep the copper zinc at a 20 to 1 ratio. But if you need to lower that sodium, that's where I may come in with 60, 80 milligrams of zinc to help lower that sodium. So I would say start easy with zinc, respect zinc, space it out throughout the course of the day, 5 milligrams early afternoon, so you're spacing it out. And understand, when you're taking zinc, you're taking the spiritual warrior. So you have to understand, where am I not fighting the good fight? Where am I not standing up to this? Where do I need to? Because if you're not fighting the good fight in your life, then your immune system takes the hit, or your hormones take the hit, or something like that. So when you're taking a mineral, you have to work for the mineral. You got to understand the energetics of it and what you are going to do to improve the energy of zinc metabolism. And that energy of zinc metabolism is highly influenced by the energy of our thoughts.
I like to say prayers before I take my supplements.
See, that's a beautiful thing to do. I do that all the time, and I have like 1 minute little prayers. It doesn't take the whole day to say my prayer. I have this, can you, will you, please you, thank you. And that, can you help this? Can you help my zinc improve my immune system? Yes. Will you help zinc improve my immune system? Yes. Please help zinc improve my immune system. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's about 30
Oh,
seconds.
I love that. I love
Can
that.
you, will you, thank you, please you.
Can you, will you, thank you, please you. Okay, and then before we wrap it up, which this has been so fun and always like it makes me want to go back and listen to our other episodes and see where I can tie them all together because I know I'm getting there. I'm getting there with this mineral stuff. I even got this beautiful Yeah,
Periodic keep
table.
studying that periodic table and look at those vertical rows. So go to zinc and look who sits right under zinc, cadmium and mercury. That cadmium and mercury, the heavier metal, will always displace the nutrient mineral.
Your favorite zinc product.
I like zinc picolinate. Zinc picolinate is probably my favorite, but I like different versions, so I'm not hung up on just zinc picolinate or a zinc sulfate. I like different variations because when I'm looking at the zinc and the sulfur, that's a Jupiter and Jupiter theme for the liver. So
Oh,
I
yeah.
kind of like if I want to work more digestion and stuff or detox, I'm going to think the zinc sulfate, or if I'm thinking more the zinc picolinate for better absorption and for the pancreas and stuff like that. So try not to stay myopic and say you got to have it just chelated to this one. So I like flexibility and coming in with many different zinc chelates.
Got it. Thank you so much for joining me again. I missed you.
It's always a pleasure. I love bringing kind of this more esoteric knowledge into the limelight.
Once again, I mean, honestly, that man runs on caffeine. And when I edit this, I listen to it on like chipmunk fast. And I have to like take breaks and take a deep breath because we both sound like two chipmunks who have, like, I don't know, snorted cocaine or something. It's too much. But it's so wonderful. I learned a lot. Since we recorded this, I have been taking really small doses of zinc and have upped my dose slowly. And I'm digging it. I'm really enjoying it. I was even looking into adding zinc to one of the topical Onas products. And he suggested I talk with Dr. Tabrizian about it. And Dr. Tabrizian said, no, you'll have a far more effective absorption rate if you ingest the zinc rather than taking it, than applying it topically. So I took note and did not add any to any of Ona's products. We're having a wonderful campaign. By the time this launches, we are going to be starting a collaboration with Jigsaw Health, which is no coincidence that it's all about magnesium balance, which is going to be the overall theme of beginning to balance your minerals. You have to be able to get that magnesium up. And we'll talk about that more in our next episode, which is going to be with either Ashley or Patrick from Jigsaw, one or the other, or both, who are just amazing and know everything about magnesium. And I had some ideas about how we can improve our topical progesterone absorption. And you'll have to wait until the next episode and my next Substack to hear about those details. All right, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Dr. Robert Selling.